The Masquerade of Fools by Marku Lindros. A terminally ill cancer patient, facing imminent death, lectures in a blue furnished hall on the power of thought as a shaper of urban communities. His movements are slow and weary, his tone monotonic, and the subject matter miles away from his actual life situation. Behind him, an image dramatizing the event is projected onto the wall. On the table sits a stack of books he has written, with the fly leaves already inscribed. Best regards, followed by a signature practiced into elegant flourishes. He says, listlessly, "Every consciousness is a sense organ of reality, through which God observes himself." I sit in the very front row, listening more to my own thoughts than to the lecturer. I try to conceive that the dying man before me is a half-open teleport to the afterlife, a mindset already orbiting an all-consuming black hole. Perhaps he truly sees things that lie behind the veil. I hear him from afar, cutting through my own flashbacks. Man's intellectual power of thought is the God that guides human streams along invisible tracks, serving the expediency of nature. He asks, as if for his own comfort, "Is not the highest stage of human thought to logically formulate questions to which it has no answers? Logic is the comprehension of natural laws, and rationality is adapting to them. The ultimate purpose of the universe is known to no one." Then he spreads his arms like a Jesus, welcoming the world into his embrace, and continues, "The boundaries of consciousness are drawn where our coherent thinking and knowledge are sufficient to carry us." The audience is dead silent. No polite applause, no reactions, only the occasional faint throat clearing or the creak of a chair as someone shifts position. The lecturer lets out a soft laugh and continues, "At a cancer research firm, I met a scientist hunched over a microscope studying cancer cells. He told me about their peculiar characteristic. They do not know how to die the way normal cells in the body do. It sounded highly paradoxical to a man who knows he is about to die of cancer, to learn that the cells consuming your body don't know how to die." With a sigh, he then says, "In a way, death has become a friend, carried gently alongside you like salvation." After a few dry coughs, the lecturer takes a long, wheezing pause and sips some water. His frailty speaks directly into the listeners' minds, like a sermon written between the lines of his presentation, to an audience contemplating their own mortality through his impending death. He then speaks of his mother, who had suffered from cancer. For a long time, she had been just a shadow away from death. Delirious, her eyeballs large, in a skeletal face, her lips melted into thin lines, parted just enough for air to pass in and out on its own, without the sound of breathing. She lay there, paper thin, holding the morphine dosage button in her hand, just waiting. Suddenly, my mother bolted upright and muttered, "Did you remember to water the flowers?" Then she sank back and drew her final breath, which in the quiet room sounded like a faint sigh. I looked at the withered flower on the windowsill and wept. The day before the funeral, I went to see the body, which lay there waxy and white-lipped. In the room, lilies scented the air, fighting against the heavy cemetery stench of a dead body. A strange message pierced my mind like a hysterical outburst of joy, a wordless, triumphant feeling for which there was no reason, as if someone were rejoicing through me. Laughter felt highly inappropriate, but I couldn't help it, and I left quickly. I also had a strong sensation that the person lying in the open casket was not my mother, but a strange, lifeless doll. I knew the grief would come later, and I would spend the rest of my life ashamed of that bizarre joy. On the day of the funeral, I didn't go straight to the chapel. Instead, I wandered around the cemetery, looking at the headstones, seeking comfort in the fact that everyone dies eventually. We carried the casket with silk straps toward its destination, a pit dug into the earth. It had been agreed this way, even though inside the casket was nothing but a cremation urn emptied to the wind. The body had already been bid farewell yesterday, just before the cremation. A musician friend played Boulevard of Broken Dreams on the trumpet, and the empty casket felt heavy as lead, forcing the pallbearers to bow their heads. I remember nothing else. Soon it will be my turn. My greatest worry is for my children. The bonds that, severed at one end, will hang from them as restless associations tied to fading memories, like a wireless signal already slipping out of the coverage area. His state of mind resembles that of a mourner. He seems to pity his loved ones for his upcoming death more than he pities himself. Perhaps the memories of a life lived take on new, more intense colors during a dying process prolonged by medical treatment, like old films being remastered. The everyday psychology of the dying is a naked landscape into oneself, where the significance of past events is weighted entirely differently than before. The masks of our roles have slipped away, and life's illusions no longer exist, or they are useless. Some detail that previously felt insignificant might occupy the mind for hours, casting one's entire life in a completely new light. He looks out into the hall, his smile like a pained grimace. Doughy cheek muscles conceal his tired eyes. He interrupts his lecture, leans heavily against the table on the podium, and says, "Sometimes it hurts like hell." Then he continues, as if in a panic, that he won't have time to say it all. "Yesterday, I read about death hotels in Switzerland, where you can legally rent a room complete with a poison chalice and funeral services. That might be an idea." A brave smile puts an end to his monologue, and he gives a thumbs up. That's it, folks. The raw intimacy of the lecture's conclusion hits hard. I nod faintly, unsure of what to think. I had seen him on TV a few times before and liked him. The hall is absolutely silent now. After a moment, someone begins to clap with exaggerated force, and everyone immediately joins in. I look around me and think, in the masquerade of fools, everyone looks normal.